When I started to reflect on what I want to share, I realized this is something I realize quite often. I will have the tendency to always go somewhere along the lines of my limits, where my understanding is at its limit, where actually I'm inquiring. Not so much am I speaking about stuff that already are quite clear for me. It's because part of my interest in sharing and teaching is that it supports my own search. When I know I will have to, that you guys are coming, I know then it gives me a lot of energy to inquire and to search and to reflect and to ponder and to connect my experience. And so this will always go where I'm interested in this moment, in this time of my practice, of my Dharma. So it's my teaching is moving with where I am at in these moments. And the way I see it, it's like I have the sense that I'm in a big puzzle, like many, many parts, like they are all small understandings and insights. Yeah, I cannot like see them all at once. Sometimes some I forget and then they come back and they pop up. And sometimes I see how these two parts go together, and little by little, it makes some sense in one area of this huge, vast puzzle. But many connections I don't see yet. Many understanding are conflicting one with the other. It's kind of a bit chaotic, the whole thing. So, and what I want to do is like to share with you this search and this game and this real research, the spirit of it, not really the definite conclusion. It's very different than if I was teaching mathematics, for instance. Mathematics, I would be a math teacher. I would have my subject. I would know day by day, and this would be kind of square. Here, it's not at all like that. It's comes and go, it's cloudy, and it's the enthusiasm for trying to connect what we know and our understanding and to deepen that I feel like sharing the most. And that goes through, of course, some topics. So the topics that I chose today is it goes along some lines I had not very much reflect in the past. I heard a lot about it, but now it's coming more in my practice. And it's also related to the retreat online we had a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago or something like this. And it's around impermanence, inconstancy. And so I want to weave a little bit more around this subject. One thing that I find quite challenging in the teachings of the Dharma usually is that they kind of apply at many, many, many levels of our experience. And I think that's something very, very exciting and very important to understand, is like that we have so many levels of experience in our daily life, in our sense of identity, in the way we walk in life. We have so many layers, and some teachings, not all, but some teachings kind of apply to all these layers. So for instance, the layer of impermanence apply to all layer of our experience. We can look at any kind of experience, we will always see that either short or long, every experience will have a beginning, a duration, and an end. I would like to be able to express more these layers. These layers I'm speaking about are kind of different ways of seeing the same thing. And one example that came is, it came to my mind a few days ago, a friend of mine, I was around, I heard from the distance a quote from a poetry that I would love to know, but it was about a poet seeing a tree like, because a tree is mainly made of water. Yeah, like, I don't know how many, the highest percentage of matter that is in a tree is water, actually. So the poet was saying the tree is like water wanting to reach the sky. Yeah, I find this image beautiful. You can see a tree like water who is going towards the sky, reaching out to the sky. So that's one way of seeing the tree. And then it triggered many different ways of seeing the tree in me. Like, I heat my house with wood, so I chop wood. Yeah. And I've noticed many times when I see a tree, very directly, I will see the tree with this wood chopper mind. So I will see where I would cut it or where it would fall. I would see which kind of wood it is and if it burns well or not well. I would see, when I see the tree, how many cubic meters it would be and how long I would last with that. Or maybe I would see that this branch needs to be cut first so that it doesn't fall in the wrong direction. So many details like this. This is directly what will come in my mind when I see the tree. And of course, if I was a, let's say, a biologist, then when I would look at the tree, or let's say, a biologist maybe. So he would see the tree. He would know from which seed. He would know the seed of that tree, how it looks like. And even if it's winter, he would know which kind of leaf that tree would have. Maybe he would know which kind of birds are nesting in that tree and why this tree is there and not there. You know, so he would have a very different experience of the tree. And then you have that person who have read and explored that tree is made of water, mainly. And then if you recall that and if you see the tree like this, then you see the tree, you can really sense that this could be water, just kind of solidified water going up. And then maybe a physician would know that the tree is made of atoms, yeah, and that actually this matter is not solid. And when you recall that, and when you see the tree like this, you can sense that this seems to be solid, but it's not. It's like plenty, actually, not even of water, but then because the atoms, the main element in atoms is space. So you then we feel, oh, this tree, you relate to it as space, solidified space. Or then a Buddhist would see the tree and he would say, like, this tree is happening in the mind. It's not even like out there as it is, it's happening in the mind. And someone who has trained to view it like this would feel that this tree is not out there like this. Or quantum physics would also explore it this way, or understanding this way. So there are so many ways of feeling, seeing, sensing that tree. And that's what I'm saying, that the teachings, it's something that is challenging, is to which level of our the experience do we address? I think that's a very important question when you hear teachings. Some teachings will say, like, with a practice, then you will evolve in meditation. And some teachings will say time doesn't exist, you know. And the same teacher can say that in the same talk. You know, it depends on where he is in at which level of the experience he is. So here, impermanence, I will not talk too much about it. I think most of us are quite familiar with it. But basically, the idea is the understanding and noticing that nothing lasts, that everything that has a beginning lasts for some time and has a, an end, and we cannot find anything that is permanent, nothing. So that is in itself, this level of understanding is quite freeing. But there's another way to see impermanence that I find quite interesting, and that is from within the moment of existence of something. It's like, for instance, same like when I was saying within the tree there is space. So we always see the space outside the tree. Yeah, outside the tree, it's full of space, and it's actually the space outside the tree that defines the shape of the tree. Yeah, but within the tree, it's full of space as well. Much more space than matter, if ever the tree exists, if I go to another. Yeah, and so same with impermanence. We see things and we experience things as having a beginning, a lasting, a duration, and an end. But we can also see, if we look very carefully in our experience, that inside the duration, things are not solid. Things are not continuous. Let's say, let's take an apple, for instance. So eating an apple, there's a beginning, the time that it lasts, and the end. So we can say, oh, if we're aware of impermanence, we know that the time of eating our apple will end. It's awareness of death, we could say also. We know that it's not gonna last. So we enjoy the taste of this apple, especially if it's a good one. We enjoy every bite of it. Yeah, because we know it's not gonna last. It gives preciousness. But if we look now in very fine detail, what we will notice, it's like there is not one taste of the apple, because every bite will have the first taste, and the taste is just a flow, a flux of constant change. It is not the taste of the apple. It doesn't exist. This is a conventional, or for ease, we have an idea of the taste of the apple, but in the reality, there is not the taste of the apple. Because when we bite in it and we start chewing, it changes and changes and changes and changes. And maybe sometimes it's very pleasant, and maybe after sometimes it's neutral. The taste is not always like so much pleasant. Same like if we take the idea of a good meal, we look forward to this meal, this is our favorite meal and everything. But when we chew every bite of it, and if we really chew it to the end, we will have a very fantastic variety of experience of taste. It's not just one taste of the meal. This is a solidification, an idea that doesn't really exist in the experience. Changing all the time, and sometimes maybe not so pleasant actually the taste. So this I find very interesting to explore in our Dharma practice. It's this solidification, this reification of all experiences. Let's say now we can do this with anything. Anything is, there is an idea of the thing and then there is the thing. And let's say, for instance, my wife or my partner, you know, this is a conventional idea, but the person that gets up there every morning just next to me is always changing, always different, always appearing different. And if I am too much caught up in this idea of this is my partner, then I'm not in tune with that change. I'm not feeling, and then I'm missing all the mystery, all the mystery of life is escaping. It's like block boxes, and it loses sense, meaning, and joy. I find the more we are able to not too much be caught up in one solid way of viewing a person or a thing, anything, then the more we will, if we are not caught up in that, if we can develop different understandings, different way of relating, then there will be more life. And same with a child. It's changing so fast. It's changing so fast. If I'm stuck with the idea, my son, I'm far behind. I'm far behind. It's going so fast. It's so mysterious. It's so vast that we have to put this in a box with an idea, my son, because it's convenient. It's helpful. It works to some extent. It's very good. I think if we, I'm not saying that we should not do that also. I'm not saying that we should not solidify and have ideas to work with. Like, they're all good, all important. But if we're stuck in that, if they limit the way we perceive, because they have an impact on the way we perceive, then we're missing out the whole beauty and mystery of every single experience. And with a child, it's obvious. With a child, it's obvious. If I'm stuck with this idea, my son, and I will miss the incredible magic of this being changing all the time. And I will bring in, if this is too much there, this idea, if it's the sole idea through which I live this experience of father-son, if it's the sole way, the only way, then I will induce a lot of tension also. If I see this little boy that lives in my house and as only my son, this will knowingly or unknowingly bring in a lot of assumption, expectations, wanting, and that will enter in the relation, wanting that he becomes like this, that he behave like that, and that the best for him, of course, but the best in all this preconceived idea that I have of what it is. Yeah, all this will intrude the relation, and it becomes, everything is like many, many frozen bits together. All my ideas about what is good, what is bad, what he should do, because this is also what I impose on me, of course. Then all of this will be very dense because there is this idea, my son. Because it's not so dense if I see him as a small being. This is a small being. Like, you know this, I have it here. I'm going to read this to you from Khalil Gibran. Just the beginning. Let me see if I find it easily. Yeah. Your children are not your children. So this is a poem from Khalil Gibran in a book that he wrote called The Prophet. Your children are not your children. So that's already quite something to say. They are the sons and daughter of life's longing for itself. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwells in the house of tomorrow. So let me find you again, because you disappeared. Yes. So you see, this is another level, it's also true. When you say your sons are not your sons, your children are not your children, it is on some level of our experience not true. I can say my son is my son, and at some level in my experience, it's true. But at another level of my experience, it's not true that my son is my son. You see, so what he's saying, then the way he expresses, speaks to a certain level, not to all of them. And when we are able to hear and develop different angles that fits different level, different ways of understanding that fit different level, then we have more fluidity, and we can, there will be less holding to one single view that always create a lot of suffering. Holding to one single view. It's very common in the Dharma also. Any view, we have one understanding about whatever and we hold to that view. But that view apply only to a certain level. So which level are we addressing? If we understand this, we understand that actually what's happening in our life is that through repetition and habit, we have some views that are, there's only one view that always come to see my work, to see anything that is in my experience, to see my wife, my partner, with others around us. It's important to check. If we don't relate to them with just one single view. So, and we understand that because we have been accepting, maybe that's the word, to see through that person, let's say other people, with that view only, it has narrowed down very much the relation that we have with that person and creates a lot of problems and difficulties. And when we understand this, it's like, wow, maybe we can develop, because we have heard and we know and we can search and we can find different ways of seeing, feeling, sensing, relating to experience and to the others. And this is, of course, the same for ourselves. When we wake up in the morning, usually we come back to one kind of view of ourselves. We very rarely we will wake up and feeling, oh, this is life waking up. No, very quickly is I wake up, and the whole story of the I, very solid, is there. And sometimes, and some of it is useful, of course, we don't relate as us of only being life, no, because we have to remember we have a work and some duties and some, like so many things are very important to take back in the moment we wake up. But it's also true that when we wake up, this is life waking up. So this is at another level also true and very useful. Very useful, because then we're not solidified and frozen into one perspective, one angle. Very freeing. If we look in details, it seems like solidification is always happening at the level of it's useful. It's useful, it's handy to solidify things. For instance, it's for convenience that we have nationalities, for instance. Let's say it's not always convenient, I agree. But I mean, it's for organization purpose. Yeah, and that we have a name, and that we have definition of anything will be useful somehow for convenience. But when we look in details, we see that this is just conventions, but in the reality of our experience, it's not like this. Anything that we look in details, we will see that it has no solidity, that it's fluid. Any experience that we'll have will not be just one single continuity of experience. It's just always moving, transforming, changing into something else, relating with the rest. It's not this experience solid, separate, existing in itself like this. And that's very very much what is these days realized in physics with the exploration of the very small particles. Yeah, it's like we don't find actual, at some level, we, again speaking at some level, at that level, when looked in very sheer detail, the very minuscule particles, one can say that there is no matter there. There is no solidity. It's they speak about fields of energy or constant movement or waves, you know? So there's the understanding that in the very, very fine, it's a movement. It's energetic. It's not solidity. And I think, I feel for me like the we need to solidify reality. I don't think reality is solid. I think we cannot relate to the extreme fluidity of reality. We cannot relate to that. So we solidified it. And this is very good and very useful. And without that, we wouldn't be able to function. But once we have, let's say, after some time of our life, let's say maybe 25 years old, 30 years old, when we have solidified enough convenient ways of relating to reality that works, like let's say okay ego, you know, ego, I mean a personality that works, enough development of qualities, maybe to, we can always develop more for sure, but if enough qualities, enough resilience, enough kind of skills in relations, and it, because it takes a lot of work to develop this. Yeah, we solidified habits, way of relating to the other, ways of relating to ourselves, so that it functions. So that takes a lot of attention. But I feel at some point, if we want to engage in a spiritual approach, it, for me, it is very much now looking into the details. It's one thing to see that everything that is solidified is convention, and to see that beyond there is, it doesn't exist in this way. Let's say swing. It's like the same pattern as with the quantum physics. It's now wanting to see in detail what is real. You cannot do that. You know, I'm not really speaking about these things yet to my son. He's 10 years old. I think he's too young. He's not at that stage. He needs to create a functioning ego. I think he has to solidify things. But I think at some stage, growing as a human being would mean realizing that we have been solidifying reality. Not just keeping on solidifying and more and more and more and more. There's one moment I think it's enough. I remember Lanza, my son, when he was a baby, and he was already at this age where he could speak already, and recognize animals and having the names of things, and being in the car with me. Many times this happened, like driving next to a field, and I say, "Oh, do you see the horse?" And he say, where? And he doesn't see, and the horse is there. And I think it's because he's still in the process of discerning the horse as separate from the rest of the mountain, the sky, and everything. I've heard that the children, actually, in the beginning, they see everything as a whole. And it takes a lot of learning to see that this is separate than that, and that is separate than that. It takes a lot of learning. And so that's what I'm saying, that I feel now very curious and attracted to do the opposite now, and to go and to realize that actually these things are not separate, and these things are not existing in themselves, and these things are not what they seem to be. It's very interesting in the spiritual path, actually. It seems to, you have to construct that so that it's all in place to function. If it's not all in place, you may have some kinds of autism or some things like this. You cannot relate to life. You cannot function. So having all that in place, then realizing that this is a construct, that in reality, you cannot say it is like this. I find this quite exciting, actually. And to find what is the role of the mind in this construct, also I find quite exciting these days. I'm speaking a lot about it. It's like there's this story of the Buddha being with his monks in a monastery, and he's speaking with the monks, and he says, "I tell you, monks, you can walk." He says something like this. It's not the exact words. But he says something like, I tell you, you can walk all your life in the same direction. You will never reach the end of the world. But I tell you, without reaching the end of the world, there is no end to suffering. And then the story says that he got up and went. And his monks were just wondering what he meant there. And it's one of his disciples, Ananda, who says, like, well, maybe what he means, it's like the seeing the end of the world is calling to this idea of cessation of any perception within us. So, because when we practice in a certain way, that we know the process of solidification, of reification. We understand it. And we're not interested in our practice in phenomena, in whatever emerge and go. We're not interested into that. We're not following any of it. Very different from other kinds of practice. Not interesting. It's a total disinterest from any phenomena. So it makes a kind of equanimity, egality of mind. There's no grasping. There's no wanting things to be different than what they are. There's no looking for any kind of experience. There is no refusal of something that is there, wanting it to go. There's a total disinterest for any kind of experience. Then, phenomena, the perceptions of phenomena fades, diminish, until it seems, that's not in my experience, the diminishing of phenomena, we can all understand it in our experience. But that leads until the moment where there is no phenomena perceived anymore. And that's what the Buddha was referring, is how in our practice we can see that the phenomena perceived are, in a certain way at least, constructed and solidified as things. And how when we don't get involved at all with any of the phenomena, they just don't appear. Okay, thank you for your listening. This was small bits of my puzzle, you know. I'm trying to put these things together. Yeah, and I hope, my hope is that it resonates to bits of your puzzle that you have, and then maybe you find, oh yeah, you know, something, and then an insight come around this, bringing more energy for exploration so that we keep going and exploring together. And and then that in this sangha with the philosophical aspect of it, then this comes back as a sharing of what you have discovered. I hope that there's a sangha dynamic of exploration, not only, oh, I say this, I say this, I say this. This is really not my intention. My intention is really to show my parts of puzzles so that it maybe resonate with your parts. You make your own puzzle and then we speak about it.